The show you're going to listen to tonight is on the Children's Crusade, and it's much more detailed than anything that I would have done here for this particular time in the brief history of the Holy Roman Empire, because it's part of a series on the Crusades, but it's a much better explanation as to what happened. The only difference is this is a really old file, and so therefore it's going to be a little lower in sound, and there may be a little less editing in the past. So anyway, I hope you enjoy it.
The Children's Crusade. This is in the year 1212, which takes place after the disastrous Fourth Crusade. And it's a really unusual moment in the crusading era. As a matter of fact, this might have gone completely away in the fog of history, it had not been for two occurrences. There is one story that during the Fifth Crusade, which of course goes to Egypt, that the Crusaders, in negotiating with the Egyptians, ran across an interpreter who spoke very good French. And when inquiring as to where he learned how to speak, he said that he had been part of the Children's Crusade and had imparted some information to the leaders at that time as to what had taken place, but most of that really had not gone down to the general population. The other one is in 1230, which is 18 years after the Children's Crusade. One of the children who had been a young priest returned from Egypt and was able to tell the people what had actually had transpired. Now, he's a nameless priest. His name has disappeared to us in history. But we do have some indication as to what took place. Now, there are actually two major groups of children crusaders. I'm going to do Stephen first of France, Stephen of Cloyes. And then I'll, because it's we have much more information on that. And then I'll talk about Nicholas, who comes out of Germany. At the end, and then I will tell what happens to both of them at that time as well. Story goes that in May of 1212, this 12-year-old boy, this 12-year-old shepherd boy, Stephen of Cloyes, went to the church at St. Denis to see the King of France, which is King Philip, and he was holding court at the time and approached him and said that Jesus had appeared to him while he was tending his flock and had given him this letter, which was to be given to the king. And of course, historians who collect documents would certainly like to get their hands on that piece of paper, but obviously it doesn't survive. And it talks about preaching a crusade, starting a crusade, and you know, Philip's not interested. He says, go on back to your sheep. Well, anyway, Stephen is filled with this awe of crusading, and he actually goes out to the steps of St. Denis and begins preaching, and it convinces a lot of people, a lot of children, that the reason the adults failed was because they weren't pure, and the children are the ones who can successfully do that. And a variety of people, he goes out preaching, other children go out preaching, and they've decided to meet at the town of Vendôme at the end of June. And the chroniclers claim that there are about 30,000 children. And so there certainly are thousands upon thousands. 30,000 would be an incredible number. And they would be all types of children. Most of them are going to be peasants, but there were evidently some noble children because they rode with their horses and escorted Stephen, who was treated almost like a living saint. There were a few girls that went and a few young priests who went. Some people say it was never more than the age of 12. There had to be some teenagers in here and some other stuff. And, of course, there are a lot of excess children running around. The family dies, father dies, mother dies, relatives won't take you in. There are a lot of people, you know, surviving on the streets, just like you find in other parts of the world today. So here's a chance to get involved. And of course, the children are very susceptible to, they've seen crusades come and go, and it's kind of inspiring, and you know, they think they can do the same thing. Well, at the end of June, Stephen gathers up his people and they head south. They go through the town of Tours, which is a pilgrimage center, then through Lyon, and they head for Marseille, because according to his instructions, if they will pray and be good, when they get to the Mediterranean Sea, it will part, and they will be able to walk on dry land to the Holy Land. Okay? So we've got expectations here. So they arrive at Marseille. They hurriedly go down to the coastline, and of course, nothing happens. And they stay a few days. Still nothing happens. Well, now Stephen's going to be getting a little, flack from the rest of the kids. Some of them will then begin going home. However, at this time, we have two enterprising Marseille merchants. William Porcius, who is actually translates that to William the Pig, and Hugo Ferris, which translates to Hugo the Iron. They offer to put 7 vessels at their expense at the disposal of the children crusaders. So 7 ships are filled. By the way, Stephen does not go. Stephen is actually more interested in preaching than he is crusading. So Stephen is not on this. And then they sail out, and of course, eventually five of the ships come back, and of course, the two men say it was incredible to see how successful they were. Now, they got away with that for a while. In 1230, as I said, this priest shows up and tells the story of what happened. And this is the story that would have also been given to the crusaders during the Fifth Crusade. Of the 7 ships, 2 of them sank in a storm, broke in half. And then 5 of them that survived then ran into North African Muslim slave traders who actually were meeting the ships at a prearranged point. So Mr. Iron and Mr. Pig are selling the kids to Algerian slavers and then going home with the money. Most of the children were then debarked in Algeria and were sold there. However, 700 of the children, probably the best, certainly the literate ones, were bundled up and sent to Alexandria in Egypt, where you could get more money. Now, there is a story that claims that 18 of these children were sent as far as Baghdad, but the 18 refused to convert to Islam and were killed. Now, the ones that were sent to Egypt, the literate ones were bought by Al-Kamil, and Al-Kamil is the governor of Egypt. And he was fascinated by languages. And of course, they recognized the different Europeans and that they were coming in contact because they're trading with it. Just because, you know, they can't go to the Holy Land as easily as you might think. The Europeans are making money transcends religion frequently. So he'll use them as interpreters, as teachers, and as secretaries. And at some point, he allowed some of them to go home. There's some belief that perhaps some people paid ransom. No one knows why he let this one priest leave, but this guy then eventually goes back. Now, Mr. Pig and Mr. Iron eventually pay for their... Actually, to say that they were executed completely for selling the children into slavery is a possibility. But it's well known that they were slavers to begin with. There's even a legend that they may have plotted to capture one of the crusading kings and ransom him, which was unsuccessful, if they were ever actually planning to do that. But at any rate, both men, after being sufficiently tortured, shall we say, were hanged on the local community gallows to kick and jump around for a little while. So they ended up getting their just desserts. Now, as far as Nicholas begins preaching in Cologne in Germany at approximately the same time. Now, he will gather up about 20,000 children, probably of the same category, although there appears to be perhaps some more middle-class children involved in this. They will then head south, they cross the Alps, they stop at Genoa, where, believe it or not, they expected the sea to open too. Well, nothing happened. Well, most of the kids said, ah, the heck with that. I'm going to head home. And some of them will then choose to stay in Genoa. But about a third of them, or less than a third, stay with Nicholas. He then goes further south, figures that maybe Genoa wasn't the right place. He goes to Pisa. Well, no luck here. Sea is not going to open. But we have the people of Pisa put two ships at their disposal. A bunch of the kids are loaded on, not including Nicholas. And they sail away. Nothing is ever heard of them again. Probably sold them into slavery. We got some really fine, upstanding individuals, don't we? At this particular point. Well, Nicholas continues on to Rome. And he actually had an audience with Pope Innocent III, who on the one hand is the most powerful of the medieval popes, and on the other hand so abuses his political power that it begins to decline. Of the respect of the papacy, and Innocent was he was impressed with the children's resolve, and he made comments about how, you know, if only the adults had the resolve of these children, but he told the children that they needed to go home. He absolved them from any requirement, any oath that they had taken, but he suggested that if they truly wanted to crusade, to wait until they were adults, and then participate. And of course, there will be a sixth crusade and a seventh crusade, so there'll be some opportunity for them if they wish to get involved. Now, what happens to Nicholas and Stephen is this. Nicholas may have headed home and died on the way. We know he does not make it home. There is another version that says Nicholas stayed somewhere and eventually crusaded as an adult, but we really have no idea. As far as Nicholas, he disappears into obscurity. Now, one thing we do know about Nicholas, and that is his father, who may have actually encouraged him to preach, was killed by some of the people in the area. He was either a victim of irate parents who had him hanged, he committed suicide. So there were some people upset about what went on. It's an odd and a very unusual era in crusading history. Now, as far as sources for this, it's pretty much the same as we've had before, but there are a couple, you know, the Runciman books, so forth and so on. However, there's a couple of other ones. One is called A Little Child Shall Lead Them, The Children's Crusade by Stevenson. Another one is The Children's Crusade by Christian. And I will recommend a couple of articles if you can find them. One of them is called The Crusade by Children by Timothy Baker Shute, which appeared in a military history magazine many, many, many years ago. And it's really one of the best articles on the Children's Crusade. It has maps, it talks about alternatives to crusades. It's really, really very good, but I'm going to say that that's probably in the 1990s. Then there is Christian History Magazine. Christian History Magazine, and I know when you say Christian history, you go, who's Christian? It's a group, it's an ecumenical group of Christian historians who have come together to produce a magazine that is even in its portrayal of religious figures. They've done them on Islam. They've done this one on the Crusades. So it's not a biased view. They have an entire issue on the Crusade. Very short introduction to all of the Crusade, but they have an article by Stephen Runciman that is strictly on the Children's Crusade. That is issue 40. Of Christian history, and I know that this magazine is still sold in most bookstores, and that they sell back issues, but they also have I think you buy a CD-ROM of all of their materials that they've ever created. And I'd also like to take at this time an opportunity to add some other sources besides the ones that I have been giving you. From the Arab Jewish point of view, There's a book called The Crusades Through Arab Eyes by Amin Maslouf. Now, that was published in 1985. There is the History of the Crusades in 6 volumes, which is a compiled work of dozens of specialists, and that is put together by Kenneth Seton, S-E-T-T-O-N. So, you know, that's a really really good choice there. And another one is Byzantium Confronts the West, which is 1180 to 1204, and that's by Charles Brand.
Now, the sources for this is Religion and the Holy Roman Empire by Ferguson, Before France and Germany by Gary, The Oxford History of Medieval Europe by Holmes, The Papal Encyclopedia by Bunsen, The Capetian Kings of France, 987 to 1328 by Butler and Adams, French History, Volume 1 by Guizot, Barbarian Invasions by Delbruck, Early Germans by Todd, and The Rise and Fall of the Holy Roman Empire by Criswell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.